It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. It is Gil Alexander. Jason Kahn, producer number seven, is here as well. I'm always amazed at what excites Jason. Jason, could you repeat what you just said off air that really got you excited?
Drew Rosenhaus is going to be on the Colin Cowherd podcast.
And you went crazy about this. You thought this was awesome.
He doesn't normally do, he doesn't do a lot of interviews.
Okay.
So it is of interest.
I'm glad you're excited by that. He's like, oh my God, Drew Rosenhaus is on. Well, good. Maybe we get Colin a couple extra listeners.
I'll
on
give
that.
A full report.
Yeah, please do. Please get back to us on it. All right. Coming up later this hour, Michael Lombardi will join us. NFL questions for him. And Brady Cannon, for goodness sakes. I only promoted Brady one or two times earlier on the show. Brady's coming. Talk RBC Heritage with us. And, of course, how his Masters went, which I don't think was Brady's finest. Brady, a guy who hits tournaments left and right, don't think the Masters was one of his finest. But I think that goes for a lot of folks who didn't have Hideki. I think the biggest line I've heard from people who bet the Masters, with the exception of JVT, who had Hideki at 50-1, but the biggest line I've heard from people is, X saved me, right? So I can say that about that. What saved me was Corey Connors' matchups Friday and Saturday and getting Hideki the night before the final round saved me. Wes Reynolds was saying the other day, and I can't remember what his thing was, something saved him as well. Matt Brown, John Rahm's performance on Sunday saved me. Like if he hadn't shot a 66, it was going to be disastrous. But because he did that and finished top five, saved him. So that's what most people at Masters will get Brady's take on that and his look ahead this week. He's got a whole bunch of bets already. So we'll get all those golf bets coming up as well this hour. Let's bring him in from under a cloud of smoke in Southern California. You can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia. Writes great pieces, and I do mean great pieces, for Point Spread Weekly each and every week. We are honored to have him here, not just once a week, but twice a week on a numbers game. It's Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Going very well. Corey Seager on the board, baby, with a homer yesterday. I know that was exciting.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, had a double as well. Had a little drought there, right? Like he was on fire first out of the chutes this year. Then he had a few games where he was human, and now he's back to being Corey Seager. We'll get to Corey Seager thought. Actually, let's start there since we just sort of ran into it. Corey Seager MVP. What are you seeing, and would you still bet it?
Yeah, I still see double digit odds. 12-1 FanDuel. I think I've seen 10, 12-1 at. 12-1 at DraftKings. I've seen 10 or 12-1 at FanDuel too. He's still below Mookie Betts, which I don't really get. Like I understand the perception, but I really think Seager is the Dodger you want. Anything above 10-1, I'd still bet. The concern at the moment is Ronald Acuna mostly. He's out of this world, so it's going to need him to slow down a little bit. But it's a long season. We're really 10, 12 games in still.
As long as Seager's barreling it up, I'm all about it. I love that. All right, here's the name of your piece, though. Hard for Ohtani to be MVP with Trout on his own team is the title of your article. That's a little misleading, though, based on how you view this. And I'm totally on board with how you view this. Please explain, and I sort of brought this up a little earlier. If Trout performs like he has been here early in the season, let's say he does some, not completely sustainable with either of these guys, but let's say these guys are both fabulous for the rest of the year. Trout as a hitter, Ohtani as both a hitter and as a pitcher. Where do you stand then on MVP?
Well, where do I stand? I stand with Ohtani because that's where my money is. As far as the headlines go, I don't write my own headlines, by the way, so when you're telling me the headline, that's the first time I'm hearing it too.
That's why I said not exactly your opinion.
That's how it goes. Do I think Ohtani can beat Trout? Yes. I'm just concerned because historically, Trout finished second in the MVP as a rookie, and ever since then he's finished first or second in the AL MVP race every year except twice when he finished fourth and fifth. So it's not unlikely that Trout's going to be at the top all season. He's also playing great already. He's just not Ohtani. That's the thing. To me, Trout hits home runs. He's the best player in baseball, but he, you know, Ohtani's only been playing, it's been 10, 11 games, I think, for the Angels. Ohtani has the hardest hit ball, the hardest hit home run, the fastest pitch thrown, the fastest sprint speed to first base. You know, you can't really sit here and tell me that the difference between this year's Angels team and previous year's Angels team is Mike Trout. The difference is Ohtani. Ohtani is going to help this team get to the playoffs. He's going to help them win a playoff game that they haven't done that in, you know, 12 seasons with Mike Trout. If he does those things, he should be the MVP. You know, and I totally get it. Trout's probably going to hit 40 home runs. He's going to continue to be the best player in baseball. But, you know, if Ohtani continues to pitch and continues to do what he's doing, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that that's not an MVP performance. I don't know if other people will see it that way, but just me personally, I think you're seeing an MVP caliber season out of Ohtani.
Skill Alexander, Jason Weingarten. This is a numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, where sports betting analytics live. Actionable sports betting information, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. Let me just harken back, because you sort of threw this in quickly, and I just want people to seize on something you said. Hardest hit ball, fastest pitch, fastest sprint to first base. I mean, this dude is Superman. He's the guy who, like, you're still hacking up a golf course, hitting 110, you know, on a par 72. He shows up to play golf for the first time, and he shoots like 79 the first time he ever picks up a golf club. That's Shohei Ohtani. And it all you did intimate this at the end. It really, with all these, comes down to what will voters value. And so for you, and I'll throw me into the category with you, we are impressed by some of these advanced numbers. We are, you know, hard hit percentages, barrels. We're into that kind of thing. Corey Seager, remember last year, was huge on all of that in the National League. I just wonder, you know, when if all things being equal, how many of those voters will care about such things? I wonder.
I wonder if at some point, if Ohtani keeps up his numbers, if some journalist asks Trout, who do you think is the MVP, if he says Ohtani, will that influence the voting?
In fact, Jason, I will make sure that somehow we get somebody to do that. How about that? We'll be like,
that'd be good.
Yes, let's get that. Let's make sure that happens. Okay, last thing about MVP then in the American League, which we're focusing here on two Angels, and appropriately so, what we're seeing in the markets right now is Trout at, you know, his typical unbettable, if you will, plus 225 at DraftKings, plus 140 at Westgate. But what we're seeing respectively at those two books for Ohtani is 9-1 and 8-1. I mean, that alone, wouldn't you tell people right now, well, just go bet Ohtani, period, because it shouldn't be that wide of a gap?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always hesitant to recommend people bet something at 9-1 or 11-1 that was trading at 20 or 30-1, you know, before the season started. If you could find 11-1, that's not the worst bet. I would probably not add more here just because I already have it. I'm not dying to just pile on more.
Understood.
But if you don't have it and you feel like you're missing out on Ohtani, there's definitely worse bets. And looking at the leaderboard, I see like Byron Buxton, Vlad Jr. You know, there's a couple other guys I'd maybe like, but there's nobody out there I want money on other than Ohtani at the numbers available.
You wrote about your Byron Buxton experience in your Point Spread Weekly piece. Cared to share that with us?
Yeah, I tried. I tried to look for the best numbers I could find. I saw 30-1. I think was the best numbers available, and I saw a stray 50-1 at PointsBet. I thought I would try to grab 50-1 at points bet. So I logged in and it was 28-1. I call that the old Bovada trick.
The old Bovada trick. That's right.
So that was disappointing. Oh, disappointing as a better. It was slightly disappointing as a points bet shareholder, but you know, what can you do?
That's a shareholder talking, ladies and gentlemen. Just wants good to be done. Okay, and to those who are looking, and I'm just looking randomly, Alex Bregman is the third shot behind Trout and Ohtani. To those who would say, hey, should I be voting Bregman, you would say what? Or betting Bregman, you would say what?
I think that number is entirely wrong on Bregman. I don't think Alex Bregman has any chance to win the MVP this year. You know, he would have to do something truly spectacular, like 40 home runs, 40 stolen bases, to really get serious consideration. I don't think any Astro tied to the cheating scandal is going to get serious MVP consideration. And I think a lot of that has to do with it being a voting award. And I just don't think baseball voters will give serious first place consideration to an Astro. So every time I see that number, I just think, well, there's probably some good value on the other guys around him because this number is dead money.
Talking to Jason Weingarten at Spreadopedia is where you can follow him. Jason, I don't want to give away your entire piece, but I literally could talk to you about everything you wrote in this article at Point Spread Weekly. One of those things is AL Manager of the Year, which is not a widely found market, at least in my experience looking for it. It's fewer and far between. Before the season started, Mike Matheny was the one that sort of leapt off the page for me in the American League. He was 40-1. You had talked about the Royals perhaps being a playoff team, and I think you correctly said that this is an interesting market as a proxy for such things, for like a yes-no. American League Manager of the Year right now, who would you bet?
Joe Maddon was available at BetMGM. I don't think he was available at BetMGM in Nevada, but he was available at BetMGM in a couple other states. And they had him at 10-1. And that interested me because, you know, like I said earlier, it looks like the Angels are a playoff team or close to a playoff team. 10-1 is kind of what I would say a better price, you know, on Maddon winning Manager of the Year than the Angels making the playoffs. If the Angels make the playoffs, Maddon will likely be one of the top candidates for Manager of the Year. 10-1, you know, it should be a lot lower. And I looked, there were probably like 5-6 guys ahead of him. And I just didn't see any compelling numbers on any of the managers ahead of him. For any reason, I would say, you know, Francona or Montoya or, you know, any of them were going to win Manager of the Year, but I couldn't say why. At least I could see at 10-1 with Maddon, I could see the Angels making the playoffs and him winning. So I just thought it was another good proxy bet for a yes-no playoffs, basically.
It's sort of what I recommended for the Dolphins last year with the AL East. I had AFC East, pardon me, AFC East division futures on the Dolphins last year, but said if you can find Brian Flores for Coach of the Year at 25-1, that's probably the better way to bet that, right? Same theory. If they're going to win the division, good shot that he wins Coach of the Year. Same thing here with Joe Maddon is what you're talking about. By the way, you brought up one other little tidbit in there, which is BetMGM, proud sponsors of this show. I used to do shows for MGM, not a shareholder, like you said, for Point Spread. I just want to be full disclosure there. But I always wonder why certain markets exist in other states, but not in Nevada at BetMGM. We've tried to inquire before, and one of the things we got back was miscommunication, but it can't be miscommunication this many times. What do you think that's about?
There was an explanation given to me once that the New Jersey BetMGM is a joint venture with a Eurobook, and that the others are run by BetMGM.
There it is.
I think that was the explanation, which still doesn't make sense to me. It's like, well, you have two sets of odds under the same,
right?
The same brand. But I think that's the issue, is that the BetMGM is more of a brand, and that each state has different rules. Like for example, sometimes in Mississippi, you could bet MVP, you could bet Cy Young, but you can't bet Rookie of the Year. And I don't know exactly why, but it's a gaming commission rule why they can't offer Rookie of the Year. So a lot of it has to do with things you can offer and can't offer. And again, like another example I saw yesterday in Las Vegas, the Nevada Gaming Commission just approved World Series MVP. Couldn't bet on those in Vegas before.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I hope everyone understands we're not attacking any book here. We're genuinely wondering what the reason is for why that is. Because there are a lot of things. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, is that BetMGM? I'm going to go bet this. And I'm like, oh no, it's in New Jersey. Can't bet it. Yes, so World Series MVP just approved by Nevada Gaming. Let me ask you before you go here about a couple other things. Cy Young, Let's start with the National League Cy Young. You and I talked about this a little bit the other day. You and just for people who missed that, for you, it's you can make, tell me if I'm accurately portraying this, you've dabbled in some other players, Corbin Burnes being one of them that you might take seriously. Corbin Burnes, my baseball pick of the day here on the Brewers. But really, to you, it just comes up DeGrom every which way, and you almost are laughing at yourself when you put a bet down on anybody else in this market.
Yeah, I bet Burnes. I think Corbin Burnes is a good bet. I don't think I'm really interested in spending more money on anybody else at this point other than DeGrom. I did bet more DeGrom this week. I think at 3-1. My plan at the moment is just to buy DeGrom futures every week, like I do, you know, my normal putting aside money and making my small investments and whatever. So each week I'm just going to put aside a little bit of money and buy more DeGrom futures and see what happens. If he stays healthy, I'm you know, very confident that he's going to be the Cy Young. So I'm just looking at this as an investment for the next couple months.
I don't know if you caught the Tribe and the White Sox yesterday shifting to the American League and the American League Cy Young race. But and I say race sort of jokingly because we're like 10 games into the season. But just candidates-wise, man, Shane Bieber and Lucas Giolito yesterday, that was everything it was cracked up to be. Bieber went 9 full innings, gave up 3 hits, 11 Ks against 1 walk, gave up no earned runs. And in Giolito's case, he didn't last as long, 7 innings, but he only gave up 3 hits in those 7, 8 Ks, 2 walks, didn't give up an earned run. Those guys were fabulous last night. They're 2-3 behind Gerrit Cole. Where do you stand right now on AL Cy Young?
AL Cy Young, I still haven't bet anything significantly in that market all season. It's a little tough because you got Cole up top, you got Glass now. You know, Bieber, Giolito. I just don't really see an edge on one of those guys over the other, and they're all under 10-1. So I'm just not really excited about, you know, building a huge position on any one of those guys in particular. I would probably consider Glass now a little more, but I just don't feel like putting money into that market when it's like a 4-guy race.
How's your preseason pledge, your resolution not to make too many season long award and futures bets? How's that going so far? Have you tamped it down a bit this year?
It's been going pretty well. I mean, part of it's just because sometimes I'll see a number and I'll be like, oh, I want to bet that, and I can't bet it.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, step away from the computer and go outside for a little bit.
Take a walk around the block. Anything today, full day of baseball, day games, night games, what have you played so far?
I bet the Brewers. You mentioned the Brewers.
Yep.
You can get them under 160 right now. I think it's actually gone down a little bit.
I don't get that at all.
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, maybe Corbin Burnes has a bad game, but you know, I'll bet on him still. I like the Yankees. Did you bet the Blue Jays today?
I did not.
No? Well, I like the Yankees. I was going to say, I hope we're not opposite again.
No. Not Oppo there. I did not touch that game. So you're on the Yankees. You like Corey Kluber in this one?
I don't like Corey Kluber that much, actually, this season. But I do like the Yankees. It's probably Yankees and over today. But two plays. Oh, actually, it's 10.5. No, I'm not going to bet that.
Yeah, no. Too high. Yankees, by the way,
but yeah,
107 Eastern, 10:07 Pacific. Earliest game of the bunch today.
Yeah, I got to get something. Got to have something going on this afternoon, this morning.
You got to. Soccer doesn't start till noon. We got to play some baseball before that, for God's sakes. I had tennis going in the middle of the night, so that's when I start, Jason. Anything else besides the Yankees and the Brewers? I'm glad we're together on the Brewers there. I did not know that. What else you got?
That looks mostly it so far. Just going to wait and see if any numbers come back in the later games. You know, we're already getting – Dodgers are -250. That's kind of short. Last year, two years ago, that would have been like -400. Remember, we were joking about Ross Stripling as a -400 favorite all those times
on the road. Yeah,
Now you have Dustin May 250 at home. I think about that like every day. How does that make sense? What prices were the Dodgers getting in 2019? You know, just those were the record prices.
Has there ever been, and I don't mean to say anything negative about John Gray, but has there ever been a pitcher that you remember this deep into his career gets more respect? And it's always questionable respect. Like, I just don't understand why we're still trying to make John Gray this thing. He's the one going up against the Dodgers in this particular game. I'm with you. I think that's short on the Dodgers.
I don't mind John Gray. It's the thing with Rockies pitchers in general is that their numbers just get skewed and they look bad and they have bad games and bad months. You know, if you put John Gray on Atlanta or on the Padres or on the Phillies, you know, he'd probably be, you know, part of their rotation. He'd be a good starter. I don't know if he's a perennial all-star, but he was a first-round pick. I always liked him.
Yeah.
Just Coors, you know. Just,
of course.
Same right. thing.
You're right. I should probably stand down on that. One last thing. Joe Musgrove, post no-hitter, north of $2 at Pittsburgh. Do you feel a certain kind of way about guys coming off no-nos?
I'd look for a plus money first inning price. I've heard people say that guys off no hitters have bad second starts, but I don't have any data to support that. I just play the first inning.
All right, Yankees and Brewers. We're simpatico on the Brewers. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. Talk to you later.
Jason Weingarten at Spreadopedia from under a cloud of smoke in Southern Cali. Brady Cannon back next. We'll talk Masters. We'll talk RBC Heritage. Golf next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
The middle of its move to Kentucky, the Ron Flatter Racing Pod originates from Tulsa, Oklahoma. How about that? There's a discussion of horse racing issues and tips for Kentucky Derby travel from two men who know Louisville very well, Horse Racing Radio Network's Dan Mason and Horse Racing Nation CEO Mark Midland. Santa Anita General Manager Nate Newby talks about what he has learned from a troublesome time the last 2 years, and trader Brad Cox makes a cameo appearance to discuss Monomoy Girl in this weekend's Apple Blossom Handicap. It's the Ron Flatter Racing Pod. It's the RFRP, y'all. It's available for download Friday at VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. It's sponsored by First Bet. By the way, the first line of that, where I say the middle of its move to Kentucky, what Ron Flatter is telegraphing there is that's where he is headed. He is headed to live in Louisville, Kentucky. So he is en route there right now. And so he'll be doing that podcast midway from Tulsa.
17 days until the Run for the Roses.
Yes. So we go from, again, March Madness.
Right.
Into the Masters. Into the NFL Draft, kind of. A little bit of a delay. Into the Derby.
Not too shabby.
Nice time of year.
Who says this time of year is dead?
Ah, nobody. Now, after the Derby, it gets a little dead-y. But there's NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs and baseball and all that. Speaking of the Masters, not your most profitable tournament?
No. I mean, a lot of the guys that we figured were going to fire, even the podcast you and I did with Joe Pita, we were talking about Matthew Fitzpatrick, Louis Oosthuizen, Daniel Berger, you know, all pretty much no-shows. Never really figured into the thing. Justin Thomas was probably my biggest investment, and he really cratered on Saturday after the weather delay.
Boy, did he.
Really looked like he was coming on. And
I thought he was dude.
He was the second shot after Friday. I believe Spieth was the favorite, and Thomas was the second choice.
Did you notice that Brady was, I'm sorry to interrupt, it was like, I said this to you off air, I think I said it on the show, which is like, a lot of these guys in the Masters this year, it felt like, to use the tennis, you know, parlance, it's like they played a really tough tiebreaker in the first set. They were right in it. They were on the cusp of going up, and maybe this was going to be their tournament. And then when they lost, the tennis player that loses the first set tiebreaker just collapses in the second set.
Yeah.
And that's Justin Thomas felt that way to me. There were some others out there too. Corey Connors, when he collapsed on Sunday.
Right.
I mean, you can go down a list of that. I don't remember thinking that ever before about so many guys.
And nobody ever really made a charge on Sunday.
Yeah.
Matsuyama almost gave it away.
Tried
but
to.
Shoffley really let him off the hook on 16 when he dumped the ball in the water there. That was, you know, as far as the long shots crew, that was really our best shot right there was Xander Shoffley. Matt Eumanns had him. But I was on Thomas. Eumanns was on Thomas. He was on Fitzpatrick. You know, Wes had one bet that really kind of got him to even or to a very small loss. He had Stuart Sink with a top 20. But, you know, a lot of the guys that we expected to fire just didn't show up, and you end up with, you know, Will Zalatoris and obviously Hideki Matsuyama. Now, we've bet on Hideki Matsuyama in the past, but he hadn't won in almost 4 years. He was completely off my radar.
I'll just repeat something I said earlier. You know, I definitely felt that way, what you said about Wes. A lot of people that I've talked to, it's like, this saved me. Like, a lot of people have that right. one prop that saved them.
John Rahm getting into the top five
was everything big. For a lot of people. That 66 that where he just sort of, you know, slept, walked through 3 days, and then his shot a 66 on Sunday. And he's like, look, I'm in the top five. The Xander thing, because I talked about this on Monday with Wes. How do you feel about this guy right now? Because we talk about Finau all the time, you know, getting second place finishes and not closing. Shoffley's, I don't want to equate him with Finau, but you're right. I mean, at 15, Hideki goes in the water behind the green. And so that's a hole you can eagle. And Shoffley now saw that. And on his approach, right, he's trying to get on the dance floor for a possible eagle opportunity, goes right in the bunker, takes out eagle. So the most he can catch up there
is... Made a heck of a birdie, though.
Made a heck of a birdie, right? Nice shot, but still... You know, that's that's the first sign of like, oh, I didn't take full advantage.
Well, he did it on the front nine, too, when he made what he make a double on the front nine when he had Hideki by the throat again.
Yes.
And I think the point you're making here is if you get Jordan Spieth in that situation or a Brooks Koepka or a Tiger Woods or a Colin Morikawa.
Yes.
I think those guys step on the opponent's neck at that point. And Shoffley, I don't know if he has that in his blood right now. And it showed up on 16 in spades.
Obviously, went
what
in the water
he really
there.
Had Matsuyama reeling at that point. And then he really allowed Matsuyama to get comfortable when he dumped it in the water.
Yeah, dumped it in the water. And then subsequent bad shot, too. I mean, it was over at that point.
Yeah, you know, I did not bet on him for this Masters. I haven't bet on Xander Shoffley for a while because his number, I don't think, is necessarily reflective. You know, he was at 20-1-ish, 18 or what have you. I think he should be more like 28, 30-ish.
He's the ultimate lurker. He lurks on the leaderboard.
Right.
But he remains a lurker.
But that's top 10 Zandy. top 10 Tony. What are we going to come up with a nickname for Xander?
We'll talk about Brady's bets this week, though. He's got a whole bunch. Bounce back for Brady. The RBC Heritage coming back right here on the Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To a numbers game with Gil Alexander.
The spring sports betting action is just getting started. Our VSiN experts are covering early season baseball trends, NHL and NBA playoff races. Plus, we're looking at all the key picks and predictions for the NFL draft. We'll give you all the tools to make the most of every bet, including our 24/7 video coverage, odds and analysis for every game on VSiN.com, our daily members-only best bet emails, and in-depth coverage of every major event and point spread weekly. The weather and the betting action heating up. Now's the time to sign up for your VSiN 10-day free trial at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Brady Cannon, kind enough to join us. I don't think I even introduced you last segment, Brady, for goodness sake.
It's just a regular deal. Yeah. Everybody assumes.
Everybody
8:25 Pacific. It's golf talk on Wednesday.
They know you. Co-host of Long Shots, the greatest golf betting show there ever was with Wes Reynolds. Before we get to your picks here, last thing about the Masters, because we were talking off air and I was saying my buddy Tommy in D.C., who's like proxy for a casual sports betting or sports fan, he's like, it's the only tournament I still watch Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. Not the PGA, not the U.S. Open, not the British, or the Open Championship as we call it now. Not the Players, but the Masters. There's just something so glorious about the Masters. And you said it, it had everything you wanted in a Masters.
Yeah, the winner was 10 under par. There were some eagles. There were some triple bogeys. There were some birdies. There was some drama on the back nine. And we got the golf course that we're used to at Augusta National. Nobody overpowered this thing. We didn't see somebody shoot 20 under par like we saw in November.
Yeah.
And now, looking back, that really wasn't a true Masters in November. And I'm not taking anything away from DJ. Don't get me wrong here. I'm just saying the course didn't play the way we're used to seeing it. And it absolutely showed up here in April last week. So that was great. I love to see the way the course tested people the way a major championship should.
It was fabulous. Which moves us to this week now. It's a new week, new bets. RBC Heritage. I saw you and Wes were properly dressed yesterday.
Oh, boy. Tartan plaid. They'll hand out another jacket this week. Tartan plaid at the RBC Heritage as opposed to the green jacket last week. So, yeah, we were clad and plaid this week.
Clad and plaid. All right. What are you doing? What do you got in outrights here?
For outrights, I took Daniel Berger at 22-1. And one thing that's very interesting about this tournament that we've seen over the years, Gil, most of the players that win this event either did not play in the Masters or may have missed the cut or were not in the thick of the things the week prior at Augusta National. Now, last year it was different because they played the RBC Heritage in June. It did not follow the Masters, so it was a different setup. But most you've got over 40 players in this field this week that played at Augusta. For the most part, I went against those guys because Augusta is such a grind. And especially the guys that finish in the top 15 or are really contending for this thing. It is so much to go through to tee it up there at Augusta National and spend 4 days challenging for a major championship.
Makes sense.
When you go to Hilton Head, it's a little bit of a vacation. And a lot of guys treat it that way. Now, so the guys that are on my card this week, I only have one guy that was in the mix at Augusta.
I was going to say, I see one exception up there. Yeah,
yeah, Corey Connors. Mm-hmm. Now, my thinking there is, you talked about how he unraveled on Sunday. I kind of think that might be a good thing heading into this week because he's still got some unfinished business.
Dude, he saved me Friday and Saturday with matchups against both Reed and Morikawa, plus money both.
Nice work.
Yeah.
Well, he's been in such good form. I don't know if he suffers a hangover this week because I think, like I say, I think he left something on the table there. Maybe he's a little ticked off about it, and I think he goes out and plays well this week. Now, every other guy I bet this week, Daniel Berger, I mentioned at 22-1, Russell Henley at 60-1, Charlie Hoffman at 60-1, Chris Kirk at 80-1, and Adam Long, my one big long bomb, at 150-1. Those guys either missed the cut or did not play at Augusta. And I think that is a formula to abide by when you're handicapping the RBC Heritage.
And if you show the outrights there, as you did, Jason, there, DJ, the short shot, is that what we're showing right here?
Yeah, never finished top 15 at this tournament.
Yeah.
And I think that goes, you know, hand in hand with what we're talking about here. DJ has had a number of top 10 and top 5 finishes at Augusta, finished second to Tiger in 2019. And then he comes here the week afterwards, and it's kind of like he's out of gas, you know, and he's like, oh, boy, I just came that close at Augusta, and he's not completely into it this week.
This is a good little field, though. DJ, Webb Simpson, Patrick Cantlay,
yeah.
Morikawa, Tyrrell Hatton. Answer, Casey. Just go right up.
Willie Z, the new man on tour.
Yeah,
Zalatoris.
Willie Z, there as well. All right, so back to, so your outrights, as you just described them, are as such, as we go to the board, the Brady big board, where he's got his outrights, and then you have other derivative markets here, too.
Yeah, what I did, just as far as the outrights and the derivative markets, I looked at corollary courses, and this is a Pete Dye design, designed it back with Jack Nicklaus, Nicklaus's first dive into course design in 1967, but this course really correlates well with other Pete Dye designs, namely TPC Sawgrass, where they play the Players' Championship. And then you also look at courses that are similar, like Colonial, where they play the Charles Schwab. It's a narrow course where you have to work the ball in both directions. Also, Sea Island, Georgia, where they play the RSM. So those are some of the courses that I looked at how these players fare at both the RBC Heritage and these other tracks. And Daniel Berger has a win at Colonial in the restart last year. He was third at Harbortown last year, two top tens at the Players. Corey Connors Connors has a 10th at Sea Island, a 3rd at the Sony. The Wailea Country Club out in Hawaii is another corollary course for me.
Oh.
Top 10 at the Players for Connors. Russell Henley, 3 top 10s at Sea Island. He has a win at the Sony, a top 10 here at Harbortown. Charlie Hoffman and Chris Kirk. Both of these guys have been in terrific form as of late. Charlie Hoffman finishes 2nd at the Valero. Chris Kirk had a top 5 at the Valero Texas Open. And they just both have a laundry list of top 10 finishes at these corollary courses. So that pretty much did it for my outright market. Played a few of these guys for top 20 finishes. And then I also added Matt Kuchar for a top 20 finish, who is an absolute horse for this course, has won at Harbortown before, and also missed the cut at the Masters, so he fits that formula as well.
Okay. I saw you had Long in a head-to-head as well.
Yeah, I've got Adam Long at plus 120 over Aaron Wise. If you look at Adam Long's resume here, a 30th at Sea Island, a 22nd at the Players. He won the Amex, and of course they play a Pete Dye course, the stadium course down there in La Quinta as a part of that rotation. He also finished 19th at Colonial. So took him at a nice plus price over Aaron Wise in a head-to-head.
Well, I was just going to ask you about this, but I see it on the screen. Do you have any PGA bets yet? And you
do
have one, huh?
I do, yeah. Ryan Palmer grabbed him at 250-1. I thought that price was pretty outrageous. I could see him at 150, but 250 I thought was pretty heavy on a guy who's in the top 50 in the world and has been playing really good golf for the past couple of years.
You ever play at Kiowa before?
I have not. I've been to South Carolina. I've played Hilton Head, where they're playing this week. Got to play that last summer. Just a fantastic property, but have not played Kiowa yet.
All right. We look forward to that. I love the...
36 days away.
Yeah, I love how the PGA is not last now. They just wedge it in after the Masters, so we have a major a month, basically.
Yeah, beautiful thing.
Beautiful thing. U.S. Open the following month, the Open Championship after that, golf, baby, and golf betting. Thank you, Brady. Appreciate it. You'll host the Lombardi line at the top of the hour.
About 20 minutes.
All right. I got questions for Michael in the interim as well. We'll do that next. Heavy emphasis on the NFL draft. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Baseball players may not get style points for homers, but baseball bettors do. New BetMGM customers could turn $1 into $100 when someone goes yard during a game today. Any game, not any game, but the one specific game that we'll refer to. Sign up for the BetMGM app using VSiN 100. And if you place a $1 moneyline wager, let's say on the Yankees or Blue Jays in the first game today, you'll get $100 if either team hits a home run. New customer offer, paid and free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. And 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. In Tennessee, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 800-889-9789. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. Once again, that's for the Yankees-Blue Jays game today. It's Gil Alexander. This gentleman hosts the Lombardi Line at the top of the hour. 12 noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. He is the host, along with his buddy Adnan Virk, of the GM Shuffle podcast, wherever podcasts are distributed. Gridiron Genius is the book. Writes for The Athletic as well. M. Lombardi NFL on Twitter. I think I've covered it all. Oh, yeah, and he's worked with all the greats. Belichick, Parcells, Walsh, Al Davis. It's Michael Lombardi, everybody. How you doing, Michael?
Good morning, Gil. I'm doing great. Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks for doing it. Listen, I have a question here, and if this answer goes a different way, this could end our relationship effectively. So I want to ask it very. Julian Edelman, Hall of Famer or not?
You know, I think it's I'm going to my next book is actually about the Hall of Fame, and I think the Hall of Fame is wrong in the sense, and this is the pretense of my book. Is once you get a gold jacket, everybody's the same. And I don't think that's the case, Gil. I think there's a difference between Tommy McDonald and Jerry Rice. Both are in the Hall of Fame. I think there's a difference between Ray Nitschke and Brian Urlacher. Both are in the Hall of Fame. And so to answer your question, I think there's certain guys that are in the Hall that you could measure Edelman against and say he belongs as much as they do. And then you're looking at it as an elite group of players, which we often do. And I think the Hall has problems because it's not one size fits all. So it's a long-winded answer to your question. I think he's played well in the biggest games of his career when it counts the most. However, that being said, you know, you don't drive to the stadium worrying about, oh, am I going to stop Julian Edelman? But I never drove to the stadium worrying about stopping Art Monk. I never drove to the stadium worrying about stopping Andre Reed.
How dare you? How dare you come on this show?
I'm sorry, but that's true.
You know what?
That's true.
I had a conversation with Peter King about this years after. Peter King covered the Giants, as you know, for many years before he was national. And he never voted for Art Monk. And his comment was, Gary Clark was the guy we were worried about. And I said to Peter King, I go, if you had all 22 footage back then, do you think you might have figured out that Art Monk was the reason for Gary Clark doing everything? And he looked at me, he's looking at this little pisher asking him this question, and he goes, you might be right. You might be right.
Well, I think knowing the way Peter King was back in his Giant days, that sounded to me like a Parcells answer.
Interesting.
That sounded to me like the answer he gave you came directly from Parcells. Hmm. And so knowing that Peter can't really evaluate talent, I mean, I'm not being as bad a man on Peter, but that's not his specialty. I would think he had to get that information from somebody to feed it back to you. So, you know, look, I think Art Monk's numbers, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Tommy McDonald, Andre Reed. You know, I mean, what is the bar? You win one Super Bowl, you're in. You go to four, you're not. You know, Tom Flores took forever to get in. Bill Cowher gets in. I mean, it's so subjective, Gil. And I don't think there's really been a book that's been defining. There should be wings of the Hall of Fame. There should be the statistical wing. Is Joe Namath a Hall of Famer, Gil?
No, but he is.
Yeah. He is for this reason, because he moved the needle of the game. He advanced the game. Is he in there because he was a great quarterback that the perception holds? No. When you look at his records, they were not very impressive. When you look at his touchdowns, interception percentage, all that, no. But he advanced the game. He moved the game further along. And maybe that does deserve a Hall of Fame vote.
All right. Well, Michael, I hope our relationship can survive this Edelman-Monk disaster that we've just had today.
Well, what's your thought? You don't think he belongs in there, right?
Not even close. Not even close. Again, and I'm triggered by this, and I don't want to do a whole Hall of Fame thing because I want to ask you draft questions for props. But it took a guy like Art Monk, who retired with the most catches in the history of the NFL when he retired. It took him 9 years to get in. We gave a 4.5 minute standing ovation when Monk was inducted as a giant middle finger to all the voters who were wrong. And I remember Chris Mortensen and Tom Jackson looking up at us there in Canton, and they were amazed. They couldn't believe it. They're like, wow, did we get this wrong? You did get it wrong, voters. And it shows you that. And what was Art Monk's crime? He didn't want to talk to reporters. That's his crime. So, like, for us to act like there wasn't some subjectivity where voters get their feelings hurt, it's ridiculous. And so Edelman, great player. He should be in the Patriots Ring of Honor. I mean, phenomenal postseason player, iconic catch in a Super Bowl. But come on, Hall of Fame. I mean, Pat Tilly's got more yards than he does. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, you know, and the one thing is they don't win three Super Bowls without him. We don't beat Seattle without his play. We don't beat Seattle in 49. We don't beat Atlanta in 51. And clearly they don't beat the Rams the year he was the MVP. So he's really responsible for three of those Super Bowls as much as anyone.
All right, where do you stand, Michael, on picks 2 through 4? We're 2 weeks out. Where do you think those are going now?
Justin Fields is working out today. There's a huge contingency to watch him work out. I'm sure the Patriots have Josh McDaniels there so they can examine him. I think 2 is definitely Zach Wilson. I don't think there's any debate about that. 3, there's all this conversation within the league. It can't be Mac Jones, even though it makes sense it's Mac Jones. I believe it's Mac Jones. I believe they, you know, people say it could be Kyle Pitts. You don't give up 2 number ones to draft a tight end. You just don't do that. You know, and so if you do that, you should get roasted, you know. And so for me, I think it's Mac Jones at 3. I don't think Justin Fields fit for what Kyle Shanahan wants to do. I'm not sure Trey Lance can do the same things. Mac Jones is really good when you examine the quarterbacks that have had success in the Shanahan system. So I do think he'll be 3. 4 is the wild card, Gil. 4 is the wild card. You know, is it going to be Trey Lance? Can Washington trade up to get Trey Lance at 4? Do they have to go to 5, 6, 7? Where's Justin Fields go? I think we'll know more after today.
If Washington does do that, what do you think they give up for that?
They probably give up the same thing that they probably will give up the same thing that the 49ers gave up. They would have to go all in. I don't think Washington wants to do that. I don't think they want to go all in. I think they want to see where this draft is going to go. And if they could get to 7, you know, that's great. You know, 19-7 will give you a 1 next year and 2 twos or whatever. I think they're inclined to do that. Carolina, look, the best thing that could happen to Carolina or to the Lions is have 2 quarterbacks available. What ideally what you want is if you want to be Matt Rhule on the clock with just 1 quarterback left, and tell your guy where to answer every call.
5. A lot of people going around saying, hey, Joe Burrow lobbying for his guy, Ja'Marr Chase, because they played together at LSU. Give us a sense, because you've been on the inside, of how realistic is that kind of conversation that a second-year quarterback would have that kind of sway? Do you think they go Ja'Marr Chase? Do you think they go with Penei Sewell ultimately?
Well, if Paul Brown Sr. was alive, they would pick Sewell because he believed the offensive line dominated the game. Now I don't know. Zach Taylor, the head coach, probably just thinks the other team's going to count the 4 Mississippi so his quarterback can get killed and throw the ball. You know, and that offensive line was about as bad as it could possibly be last year. Jonah Williams, I know they drafted him in the first round, but they had no right tackle. They played Bobby Hart at right tackle. Give me a break. I mean, Bobby Hart just signed at Buffalo. Bobby Hart was a turnstile. That whole offensive line wasn't very good. If they don't fix that line, Burrow's going to be in the injury report again next year. I think Ja'Marr Chase is an outstanding player. I think he's tremendous. However, that being said, you better protect your quarterback. You get a chance to get a guy in the draft that you know is going to go to the Pro Bowl, and he's going to have multiple Pro Bowls, and he's going to play 12 years, 13, 14 years. You better take that guy.
Who's your favorite defensive player in the draft, Michael?
You know, that's a really good question, Gil. It's an interesting defensive draft because there's no one that, you know, just jumps out at you. I think J.C. Horn, the corner from South Carolina, has tremendous raw potential. I think he could be, you know, a real true player who escalates his game once he gets into pro football. And I think when he takes off, you know, I like Mekhi Parsons. I do worry about what is he going to do on all 3 downs. I think Pay from Michigan's a really good player. This is not a great elite defensive draft. This is a good defensive draft with a lot of good players. Khalif Farley, the kid from Virginia Tech, is outstanding. I think the medical is what driving him down a little bit. Surtain, what worries you there is that Nick Saban does such a great job of coaching defensive backs. Will this guy get any better? You don't know that.
I listened to the Lombardi line. I listened to the GM shuffle. And I hear you saying some things.
You listen because you like my baseball picks lately. Yeah, like, you know, you like that baseball.
It's
Don't ask me about baseball here.
No, yeah. Yes, I'd like to know what you feel about the Mariners game today. No, you said something about Jimmy G and the Saints nibbling. So whether the Niners go Mac Jones or not at 3, I'm in the not camp. Where do you think Jimmy G ends up?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, we're in cap jail. So there's a lot of teams that can't just take Jimmy G on. Plus, he has no trade clause in his contract. So he'd have to rework his contract. He'd have to prove the trade, rework his contract. You know, but I do think their teams are kicking tires. I do. I think New England could be a team kicking their tires. I think they can't afford him right now. I think that's the issue. You know, you just can't slide $25 million of cap room into your cap when you don't have any cap room. You could say, well, redo the deal. Well, good luck trying to get that done. You know, so I think right now, I do think they'll hold on to him because it makes more sense to hold him now and let his value increase by not trading him.
Last thing, Michael, because I know you got to go and do the Lombardi line. A couple very sort of quiet signings here in the last 24 hours. James Conner to Arizona and Giovanni Bernard to the Buccaneers. We know how much Brady loves little pass-catching running backs like that. Are either of those things a thing to you, or both, or neither?
Well, I thought they would sign James White, but he couldn't afford to sign him. They got a minimum on Bernard, so that's where we are. And then, you know, Connor, to me, never had any burst or acceleration last year. If he's healthy, maybe. I see Connor as an average running back. I don't think a guy that you want to give him the ball 200 times a year.
Michael, appreciate it as always. I'm going to go recover now.
Thanks, Gil.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, man, it wasn't that bad. I knew where you were going, though.
Yeah, you knew. Michael Lombardi, everybody, host of the Lombardi Line, comes at you in about 3 minutes. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gil.
The best there is, Michael Lombardi, everybody, at M. Lombardi NFL. Good luck with all your bets. Got a whole bunch of baseball action this morning. Enjoy. Lombardi Line is next right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.